The following Dharma talk was given by Trudy Jinpu Hirsch Abramson at Zen Mountain Monastery. Reverend Jinpu is a Zen priest and has served as a Buddhist chaplain and chaplain supervisor for over 25 years. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
I think I've got it together now. We had an amazing workshop with amazing people. I've done this workshop before, but this group seems special. The willingness that they had to move forward in being vulnerable, the willingness that they had in showing up to the truth of who they were and what they might want rather than, I'll say what they need rather than they desired. And that's not usually the same. So that they were able to touch some of that, which is not easy. And I just want the workshop participants to know that's pretty rare that a whole group would be willing to go through it like that. So it opened my heart big time. And then what happened after that, somebody started asking me about Daidoshi. I might lose it again, but that's who I am. So he was my teacher here. The last time I did this in public was my father died. And they pulled me off the stage. They wanted me to say something about him. And I started doing this. So my brother came up and grabbed me. And, you know, he was embarrassed in my behalf. I wasn't embarrassed. I've been a chaplain for close to 25 years now. And I've seen it all. So this is about an open heart. This isn't about feeling weird in public, about tearing up or feeling sad. I know I'm going through grief right now, which is interesting to me. So I think I'll share that with you, because I think it's rare in the world that we have this chance to share grief. Daidoshi meant everything to me when I first came into practice. I remember the Guardian Council. You have to go through the Guardian Council. They check you out. So I went in there and there was, they were starting to ask me questions about, why do you want to come here? What's your purpose in coming here? What's your, you know, why do you want to do this? I'm not a verbal person. I didn't have the answers, you know. I'm an emotional person, as you're guessing right now. So then I remember Shugen Roshi now, he was a monastic at that point. He said, he looked at me and goes, you know, if you come here, you're going to be a spoke in our wheel. And I remember, I'm not without ego. So I remember saying to myself, because I wasn't going to say anything that would stop me from coming to the monastery, but I had it working miles, you know, very quickly in my brain. And I was feeling inside, I don't want to be a spoke. I don't want to be a spoke in your wheel. I said, and at that point, I thought it was the way I'd been practicing for a long time in Hinduism before coming here. And actually, it was my husband who told me I needed a teacher. So I listened to him. He's passed on as well. I think Daidoshi died in 2009, was it? Yeah. My husband died in 2007. So I hope I'm able to still talk, because it just keeps something about coming here this time just cheered my grief up. Grief is great. I'm actually feeling good about it. It might not look like that, but I am. Don't be afraid of your grief. It's a sign that somebody meant something to you. And don't worry about losing it if you stop grieving. You don't. That person is, always going to be in your heart. And actually in a lot of other parts of you as well. You know, it's like in the cells of your body. I don't know exactly how it works, but I hear his voice sometimes. It's nice to have feeling his presence. And I actually feel his presence today. So that was part of it. So anyway, being a Hinayana, which is we're Mahayana in Zen, in this Zen monastery, and Mahayana is the greater vesicle, greater vehicle, and Hinayana is only told that it's the lesser vehicle from the greater vehicle. You know, so I was totally a lesser vehicle, but I felt a greater vehicle. You know, and nobody was going to take my transcendence, my ecstasy. I've done a lot of sitting before coming here, and I didn't have a teacher, so I was pulling the practices from Tibetan. I have Jewish roots, Kabbalah. I was taking it all and sitting with it and being my own teacher. And I didn't even think I needed anything else. I was ecstatic, blissful. I knew how to do that. What I didn't realize was it was just a peace, and a peace I was very attached to. And that's the greatest gratitude I have for Daito. Of course, without him, this wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have been a chaplain, definitely. And I wouldn't have made it my life's practice to practice and to grow and evolve. It's a continuum. It's not like, you get in line, that's it. Boy, you can throw away everything. It doesn't work that way. If anything, you feel... if I was Christian, I'd say, I feel like a God fractal, And you would say, well, that's a spoke in the wheel, isn't it? And I'd say, no, it's a God fractal. So that's how I brought those two things together for me. It was like Shugen Roshi was right. And I was also, I wanted to be the hub, I wanted to be that emptiness, not, because the hub is where, the metal goes and holds up the cart, but the hub itself is empty. So I was clinging to emptiness. I didn't know that's what I was clinging to. And I certainly didn't want to let go of it. What was the point, And I had many times Dokusan with Daito, where, he'd say, leave Trudy outside. That was Jinpu Trudy here. And I said, yeah, okay, how do I do that? It's like, you hear all these things and you go, okay, that sounds fair enough, but I'm going to pull off my body? No. Pull off my mind? No. Pull off my emotion? Never. it's like all these things, right? And you feel like you're being stripped. And the more you sit, actually, I think it's a universal kind of feeling, because when you come into practice, you're told you're going to peel this onion layer by layer by layer by layer by layer. And it's true. But what you hold on to You know, you think you can let go of, well, I don't have a problem letting go of this problem. I don't have a problem letting go of my career. I don't have a problem letting go of people. You know, you go through it and you one by one as the layers go, it's okay, take that one, take that one. As if there's somebody taking it, right? But the layer of the hub, no way, you know? And that was, even though pretty early on, and mind you, it wasn't early on, I've been on this practice since I was born, you know, I mean, it's like that drive to know who we are and that drive to know what the life is like, what truth is like, and drove me. It drove me through my dance. I was a ballerina. It drove me through that, and music was my first god. It drove me through, you know, everything I did. It came through that lens. And so when I finally came to the monastery, I felt, I'm home. This is my home. You know, it had that kind of, I know this kind of place. This is it. I can sit here. I can, you know, this will be my cave. I'll sit in the zendo. I won't look outside of the practice, you know. But I was kidding myself, because through, even though I passed Mu 600 koans, you know, it's like, so you'd say, okay, you really got somewhere, Trudy, you know. What I was clinging to was the thing you love most, you know. And for me, you know, it's called different names, so I could say God. I love God most. You know, I would have been a good nun, you know, a Christian nun, a Jewish upbringing, a Christian nun, you know. And because that's in my nature. So being here and being a monastic was like, you know, right on. You know, you're in the right place, right time. Go for it, Trudy. And I did. I thought I was doing it, you know, doing the best I could as a monk here. And I'm a hard worker. So to me, I thought, what else, you know, what else do I need to do? And even though I moved up in the hierarchy, and it's a very different feel right now. I have a very different feel about this place right now. When I first came here, the word I would use, it was more boot camp. It was, and I know people who aren't here anymore, but a lot of them were, you know, sit straight, you know, sit. And it was just like scream, and everybody would be jumping, and then they'd come around with a kisaku and smack, whack, whack, you know. It's like, okay, I'm awake, you know. But it was, there was a very, I don't mean to be, for me, boot camp was perfect, so I'm not even putting down boot camp, because if you've ever been in a ballet company, you could say it's a boot camp too, very much so. absolutely. Anyway, so it felt natural. I could do this. I could do this. And Daidoshi, you know, leave Trudy outside, but he kept my feet to the fire. And I don't think I would have, even though you get Mu and you get the cons and, you know, you're moving on. It's almost like the red belt, black belt, you know, you're going for the goal or something. I don't know what. But what he did do for me was not let me stop reflecting, sitting with how I was attached to the hub. I can't tell you how hard that was. So what you're seeing is my love for my teacher, and that's there for life. Anybody you lose is going to be there for life. Don't worry about it. You know, they might not be embodied, but they're there for life. I've worked enough, I said, in the hospitals to hear every story about, you know, who comes for the people as they're dying? And everybody's going, you know, booga booga stuff. It's not at all. You know, it's like I've been present when somebody points, you know, he goes, there, you know, there's my uncle. And it's like, you know, I'd go, where is he? I'd like to see him too. You know, I'd like to, he goes, there, do you see him? And I was like, I couldn't see him, but I could feel the connection to him and somebody else. There was somebody there for him. And that's happened more times than not with death and dying. So I'm saying that publicly. It really is. There was one woman, and I've talked about her because she personifies when I really actually felt death. And that's why I do these death and dying workshops, because you can read about it, you can know about it, you can, you know, do 600 cones and think, one of the first cones, easy cones, is, you know, show me you're dead or whatever, or something along those lines, you know, and then you become a corpse, you know. I remember when I did that with Daido Shi, and he said, well, you certainly look dead to me, you know. And then I opened my eyes like one eye looking at him, you know, and he said, yep, certainly look dead to me. And then rang his bell and I left. So, you know, we think we have our own narrative all the time. We think we're getting somewhere, doing something. It's a strange kind of narrative. But it creates our sense of self. And that has to be looked at. And as I said, the first layers come off easy. They're easy. But it's those things we think we don't have to let go of. It's not even in our mind that we need to let go of them. It's the thing that we think, well, that's who I am. That makes up my very essence. You know, so we have those stories in us that we tell ourselves so that it'll make sense when we grab onto something. So that's I think, and I'm pretty sure that everybody has that hidden something, you know, that you don't even think right now, probably, that it's something you're going to have to let go of. And I hate that word, letting go. It's, to me, it shouldn't exist. There's that's like Dido used to say, putting another head on the one you already have. You know, it's like, okay, I'll make effort to let go now. Well, that's two efforts. You know, one is you're not letting go, and the other, that's resistance effort, and the other is the effort of, I'm going to let go. I'm going to learn how to do this. It's not about that. I'd say it's about moving your energies towards, if you need a goal word, you know, a goal, moving it towards no goal, okay, right? And as you do that, because the passion or the necessity is so strong in you at some point, you're willing to, I think I described it to one of the workshop people, you know, you have one foot over here and one foot over there, and there's a river in between, and you really go, okay, I have to let go of one of these. You have to make that choice. Actually, that choice is when a lot of people leave the monastery. They choose to stay on the side. They feel secure, you know. It gets very scary at some point. So, but to truly let go, you've got to put your weight enough, you know, or you have to maneuver enough to push off, right? To at least push off. So you can say letting go is pushing away, at least, if you need something to do, at least you push away from that. But really, letting go doesn't involve pushing. You know, it involves embracing. I would say letting go is an embracement of a larger whole, a larger wheel, a larger rickshaw, you know, a larger earth, a larger universe, a larger, you know, just you can keep going to anything we might be thinking that's out there or what we know. So letting go is embracing the whole. I mean, that's a word. We use it all the time, but what does it mean, the whole? What does it mean to be whole, complete, lacking nothing? That's very Zen Buddhist, you know. We're perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Well, it sounds great, and it is great, but how do you move from that foot, the sounds great foot, to the actuality of that? And I think that's the journey that you take as a practitioner, if you're willing, you know, if you're willing. Because it is a choice all the time, you know, every moment is a choice. And we live in a duality, the world is dual. I mean, from the moment you're born to the moment you pass, continue on, whatever, it's always a choice. So be conscious of that choice. That's something I can say. Be careful of that choice, because look at the world. We have created this world together, all together, with our energies, with our human energies. We've created the mess we're in right now from those choices each of us have made all together. You know, you can see it working itself out in politics. You can see it working itself out in the schools, in the streets, you know, in the corporate money-grabbing world, in a way. And I'm not putting down corporate. Yes, I am. Only in the way corporate isn't, you know, it's faking, it's the whole, you know, to incorporate, right? Those are nice words, right? But it means I'm grabbing it all. But I don't think that's what I want to say. Anyway, that grabbing. I was going to start this talk with a poem by Kozan Ichiko. And it says, empty-handed I entered the world. Barefoot I leave it. My coming, my going. Two simple happenings that got entangled. Right? Now again, you read that and it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. What I've learned since COVID and before, but now I've really, I really learned this. Take those words apart and sit with them. You know, words are powerful. You know, if I say, anything I say, I love you or I hate you, you know, they have very strong energetic containment to them. And when you shoot them out at somebody, it does shoot out, you know. And so we're not even conscious of what we're saying, you know, right now. And we've got to get conscious of what we say and think and feel. You know, it's very important to know the spoke. You know, the acceptance of that spoke, for me, you know, maybe other people, I have no problem with the spoke, I have a problem with the hub, you know, and therefore go with the practice. You know, there are books created for people who are attached to the spokes, the books created for people who are attached to the hub, books created for people who think they know it all, you know. I mean, I was there for a while myself, and I still am, here and there. But at least there's moments when I do feel complete and perfect, and I lack nothing. But in between that is they get entangled, because I'm a human being. I get entangled, you know, I'm entangled with definitely family members. It's like you just put me in the room with certain family members and boom, you know, forget about practice. It's all down the tubes. So there's all that going on. But basically, if I call it, for myself, and maybe it's good to have some trick or tool for yourself, but you have to come up with it. I don't think anybody can give it to you. And that's true for everything. Nobody can give you a thing. This practice is so wonderful because nobody can give you it. It's not about somebody giving you something, because that means either you're lacking something or you've given over your life's power, my life's energy, to somebody who you keep waiting for them to give you this. I'll tell you right now that, not happening. So that's why sit still. Sit, you know, sit still and you know, like that gatha at the end of the sitting periods that we do. Time swiftly passes by. I mean, I can't believe I'm at this age sitting in a chair. I used to love sitting cross-legged, you know. I don't enjoy sitting in a chair. But my knees are going, you know. It's just, to me, it's almost like aging is a slow boat to enlightenment. You know, everybody's going to get there. And anyway, so take a word and contemplate it. I don't think we do enough contemplation. I think it should be part of any practice, especially here. You know, we use the word meditation to include everything, but koan practice, and contemplation is contemplation, and meditation is meditation. If you want to separate these things out to study them, of course, bring it all back together again. God, there's such a rush going through my mind. You know, it's very hard to separate it out so I can offer it to you, especially with this last visit here. Like everything that's ever happened here just is coming up like flashes. And I'm having a lot of trouble handling it. Anyway, empty-handed I enter the world. I'll do a little contemplation with you, okay? We'll do this one together. Empty-handed, I enter the world. So where do you go? You know, so if I'm sitting there in contemplation, I'm opening myself up to not knowing, basically. And in that not knowing, but keeping that as a focus, empty-handed, I entered the world. The first thing might come to my mind is a vision of a baby, right? Babies come into the world, right? That's the first thing that's coming into the world, is baby. Then they smack their bottom, they scream like, I don't want to be here. And then they grab, you know. You've all experienced that, right? It's like, and you can have a baby hang from that finger. They will hang. They won't let go. And when you think about that, our first instinct, you know, to survive, it's a survival mechanism, is to grab and don't let go, right? We're trained. So think how hard that is to start letting go of anything. As a baby who you'd say isn't thinking this through, hasn't done the practice, you know, it's like, bam, right? Bam. You can't get them off of your finger. Anyway, so that would be it for maybe one contemplation, then I'd go back. Same thing, think again, you know, not think, no think again, no think again. It's like grace, in Christianity, open yourself up to grace. It's very simple. I mean, they're doing the same thing, or Lactio Divina in Catholicism, with their monks would be studying that. And Lactio Divina is taking a phrase like, let go, let God, right? And you take each word and you do the same process of opening up to each word. Let. Wow, that's an amazing word, right? Let. What is that? You know, let yourself be flooded with the possibilities of that word. It has a lot to teach you. Every word has a lot to teach you. Let. Okay, and go, and then you do go. Another time, another conflict. Go. Now that's an active, very active, right? Go. That means from here to there. That's a linear word. Here to there, you know, go. Move. and get away from that point, go to this point. We're totally linear, you know. Let's go, you know, charge, kill. It's like, yeah, let go. And then you put the two together, let and go. Let go means something different than the words by themselves. When they get together, when they have a relationship, the whole thing changes, right? So you put that aside after a week or so, and then let again. But now this let is different than that let. Like, my truth is different than your truth. There isn't a truth, you know? To each of you, you might go, yeah, this is the truth. And then you hear someone else saying their truth, and it's, you want to punch them in the face, right? I mean, isn't that our human way, is punch them in the face. They're wrong, I'm right. Bam. So that's how we develop the world and what's happening. There should be no war right now. What is that? I mean, it blows my mind. It should be in a museum. How can that solve any dispute? How can that sorry, you're being part of my thinkings. But seriously, right? What are we doing? What are we doing? I mean, we're a barbaric age still. I think we're just starting to move out of it because we're waking up. I can see that happening, but as you turn on the light, guess what happens? The cockroaches all come out, you know? I mean, that's what's happening right now. We've turned on the light just a little bit. All you need is a little light in a dark room. It's amazing. But you can't put dark in a light room, right? You can't see that. So the power of light is powerful. I mean, and that's illumination. That is enlightenment, right? A word, now take that word apart. So, interesting. So anyway, you keep going that way. So let go, let God. At the end of that, imagine how powerful and how much you've learned and how much it has to teach you, each of you, right? I find I'm keep looking over here. I'm sorry, group over here. Split. Okay, so barefoot, I leave it, right? Empty-handed, I entered. You know the power of grabbing, right? The Buddha knew it. Dukkha, right? Attachment. What do you think attachment is? I don't have it. I want it. It's mine, right? That's attachment. But it starts with lacking. You know, why do you think something's outside of you? It isn't. But you have to go through all your resistances and all the peeling of the onions over and over and over and over. And I think Daido was a master for me. I know I've heard some stories about his death, you know, boo-hoo, he was angry. I mean, he's the one who used to talk about that story of the monk who was having such a hard time dying up on the hill. I mean, I'm sure you've heard him do that one. And his disciple, the teacher who was screaming in pain with his death, the disciple was with him for maybe 20 years. I mean, that's someone who is really entangled with the practice, you could say. And he said, I'm out of here. I thought, where's your peace of mind? You know, it's like, how can you be screaming and carrying on like this? It's crazy. You know, it's I've got the wrong master. I'm out of here. And he left, and he went down the mountain, met somebody, another master, at the bottom of the mountain, we'll say. And he went to that master, and the master, the classic question is, you know, where do you come from? He goes, oh, master on top of the mountain thing. And he goes, he's a fine, you know, that's one of the finest masters around. So what's your problem? He goes, oh, he's not the finest master around. He's been screaming and carrying on like a banshee. He's dying right now, and obviously the practice hasn't worked. You know, it's not working. Something wrong with this master. He shouldn't be going through that. And the master at the bottom of the mountain smacks him, you know. I mean, it's very Zen. But they must have really smacked these guys. and says, don't you realize that his screams could be heard throughout the 4 counties or 9 counties? I'm not good at exactitude, so, but basically that's a story that he was so inside. He was his screaming. He was his death. He was his death. He was his dying. And we all die differently. I've learned that. You know, we don't die the same. Mostly we die the way we live, so be careful. The times when people change when they die is when they aren't themselves. And death, the death part, the dying part, opens them up to be vulnerable and to be themselves. They start to be, they have nothing to lose, right? And that's what's hard with this practice. You have to get to that place. You have nothing to lose. So, it's a very difficult thing, and I can't recommend it enough. You know, it's like, as I said, Dido never, well, he hit me once. He really did. He hit me with a stick, and he broke that stick on me, and I'll never forgive myself, but... it was a good moment because I needed to see something at that point. It's a whole nother talk. Okay, barefoot, I leave it. So we have that linearity, right? We come and we go. Barefoot, you know, empty-handed I come. Barefoot, I leave it. Now that means... Just the phrasing. I know this is a translation, but I'm guessing they got most of it right, because barefoot means you had shoes on, right? Or you had a covering on, because you wouldn't be having to say barefoot. You know, it's like there's something that's been removed. So barefoot, you remove all those robes, those socks, those shoes, those things that we hold on to that make us us, you know, or what's your favorite color, what's your favorite dress, what's your favorite shoes, you know, it's like, you know, what we do in culture, in our culture. So barefoot, I leave it. And so what is this it, right? And is there a period at the end of the sentence? You know, I have died. And in Zen, you know, again, words until they're not. No birth, no death. Strange thing to hear, right? Now, if I was to say, but is it true? You know, you'd go, right? Or something like that. I know people who have died. They're dead. Dead is dead. And I went, you come with me to the hospital. It's especially, I think, in hospice. People always have those experiences of, I had an experience that was really powerful. I have a lot of experiences around things that have happened that have taught me about mysteries, but they're not mysteries. They were mysteries. Or about miracles, they're not miracles. They just haven't been proved by science, you know, been proved by physics or whatever. As soon as they're proved, they lose their miracle standing. That's all. But there are miracles. I've been around patients who the doctors say, they called me in as a chaplain, and they'll say, you know, this person's going to die soon. Could you please go? They have nobody with them. Could you please go sit with them? And say, yeah, sure. And I'll go. And yeah. I think I'm going to tell you about this woman. So this was early on in my chaplaincy. I was going to say career, but it's so much more. But very early on, and I had just had, I think, one unit of chaplaincy. There's four units, and I did eight because I wanted to know every kind of a person there was, every kind of death there was. You know, it was like I wanted to be able to be there for somebody else, and I wanted to expand myself to include, and I can say, when you look at me, you're looking at thousands of people that have shared their lives with me. You know, I hold people from Auschwitz, you know, in that time, you know, we're talking in the late 70s, when a lot of those Auschwitz survivors were coming into the hospital, and you'd see the tattoo on their wrist, and they never told their story to their kids. The kids have problems usually because energetically, you know, the kids know, but nobody talks about it. Well, nobody talks about death much either, right? I mean, even today, you don't take your child to see his dying father. Of course you do. Of course you do. Who better? You know, so, you know, don't think that that's it might be something you've learned. It's wrong, in my opinion. People say I'm opinionated. Anyway, that's my opinion. It's wrong. When those kids do see their father or mother, they're part of their lives, just like Dido's part of my life, you know. Don't stop that. Don't say, and then you tell the kid, oh, he's in heaven now, don't worry, he's having a good time. No. You say you don't know. Kids understand more than you think. You know, the children's center and the pediatric care, they know. Kids know. And then they try to protect their mothers. But they know. And they try to help the staff, help the mothers, tell the doctors. You know, it's like they know. They know what's going on. But they protect the parents. So then the parents are saying, you're okay. You're going to be fine. The child knows, you know. But there's no room that they could have that conversation or that emotional relationship. And that's too bad. It's too bad. Okay, back to this woman. She taught me about death. So already I, you know, 600 koans down, right, and that kind of thing. I've got this under my belt. So I'm called, and this is probably about the second year, something around that. So I've had some experience as a chaplain already. I get called in to see this woman who had no family, no friends, was all alone in their special. There's always special sections in the hospital where they have the room for the dying, because we don't want people to see them. And from that room, they take them into an elevator down to the bottom. You know, it's like, so nobody needs to see them. And if they, by accident, die on a gurney, they just pretend they're sleeping. You know, they'll move them through the halls, not with the cloth over their head. And, wow. So we have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of work to do. It has to change. We're not doing it well. And we're not doing... Okay, back to the woman. I haven't lost track. Anyway, so I get called to this woman, and she's very old. It must have been late 80s. It's hard to tell, because already her eyes were sunken, and her skin was almost peeling off her body. You know, there was no life to her at all. And she was barely conscious. And when I came in, you know, she was barely looking at me. And I moved my chair close to her, so we were very close. And then all of a sudden, she sits up, grabs me, like a steel vise. I mean, where'd that energy come from? You can ask yourself that. That's there. That energy is there. Anyway, she steel. It was like steel. So imagine, like, you know, like I'm gonna use you as an example. Like, bam, and it's steel grasp, and then your eyes pop open, and you're staring at me, you know, like this, and you're pulling me forward. So her eyes and my eyes were like this close together, you know, eyeball to eyeball. And when she did that, I started to shake. I was so scared. I was like fight or flight. You know, I was in that, my energy was like freaking out. At that point, I'm like trying to get out of her grasp, her grip, and I can't. This fragile old lady, you know, and I couldn't get out of it. She wanted to take me into her dying. I mean, it was very clear what she was, she didn't want to go alone. And I was wanting to get out of there, you know. I mean, desperately, like my life was at stake. I had that, like, oh my God, I'm not ready to die, you know. It's like, I didn't know I was so attached to living because, you know, most of my life was like, take me anytime, you know. So it was like I was attached to living, you know. That was like such a teaching for me right there. And then she wouldn't let go, and we were just like, and we were both tense as anything, and she wanted to take me, and I just stared, and she's just not letting go, and I'm realizing it, and I'm struggling, and she's holding. And eventually, it's like the struggle stopped, and I'm staring. We're like this close, eye to eye. And I just go, you know, I just relax. It's like, okay, take me, you know? It was like, okay, take me. I'll go with you, you know? And at that point, she released her hands, and we stayed there, that close. And she laid back down and first looked at me, and we both had this, you know, the only thing left after you let go of the fear, because that was all fear. You let go of the fear, guess what's left? Come on. Come on. Yes, love. It was like in the room. It was like, she felt, she was like a little smile on her face and laid down. And I was like, I just was in love with this woman. You know, it was like, but not so specific. You know, it's more like just love in the room. And that was the first time I actually really faced death. You know, seriously. So the experience is important somewhere along the ways. And I didn't know it at the time, but I know it now. I left the monastery so that I could test this practice out. You know, I needed to test it in the world. You know, it was like, okay, what belongs to me and what belongs to boot camp? You know, what's mine? What will stay as mine? You know, mine? What's the monastery? And that was really important for me to know. And I started to learn. It was a beautiful fit with chaplaincy because I'm not made for a lot of work in this world. It's I don't think so. You know, I can't type. I don't have a lot of possibilities that way. A ballerina, I was an artist, you know, or am an artist still. I am still a ballerina still. Oh, God. Anyway, so that experience was powerful and has stayed with me. That's what I mean, the patients and the people you meet, they're all there. They stay with you. They'll all stay with you. And you can pull them forth. You know, today is Daido, she's day. I'm pulling him up, and it's a, you know, just parts of it. I'm sure I'm going to go home and do some more of this. Because it's so clear, you know, what the journey is at this point. But I'm 73 now, so, and I've done this my whole life. You know, so you say, well, when do I get it? You know, when does it become easy? When does this life become easy and I'm peaceful and I'm calm? No, you're a human being who might have a possibility of realization. And that is the path, the way, has created this monastery for each of you. You know, to give you a place away from the chaos and the noise and the stuff that has made you you, in a way. And will if you plug yourself into it, you know, don't squander your life, it will take you to a place where, you know, that'll make me one with everything. You know, it will take you there. And you might ask, well, what's the benefits? There are none. But it's incredible. You know, it's wonderful. That's all. So maybe that's a good place to stop. I didn't do anything here. So that's pretty good. Okay.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.